The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D's taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and tonight for you guys, I actually have a return guest who came on last time sharing some of his own personal experiences, but we didn't get too much into some of the stuff that he does as far as research goes. So this time, I figured I'd have him come back on, dive into some of the fascinating research he's been diving into, and of course, touch base with extraterrestrials and with Sasquatch, two of my favorite things to discuss, and diving a little bit into my most recent theory that I had dropped on Bizarre Encounters, which I will probably also drop on this feed so I don't have to redo the same episode twice, but definitely a fascinating theory, and I think you guys are going to enjoy a lot of the connecting points and different things that we discuss in this episode. But before we get into that, of course, we have to do news and updates and front of house. I know I'm going to keep talking about this one, but I want to make sure that I promote all of this stuff properly. The Open Minds Media merch store, I have dropped 4 new designs over there. And of course, I restructured the store to make it a little bit easier to navigate. Not as much BS just kind of thrown in over there. I do have a lot of new stuff that I'm going to be working on for the Open Minds Media merch store. Of course, it's not just going to include podcast designs. I'm primarily going to be focusing on conspiracy, cryptids, UFO, alien, paranormal, all that kind of cool stuff as far as designs go. Try to create somewhat of like a brand name for Open Minds Media under also doing t-shirt designs. So if you guys are interested in all that kind of stuff and you guys want to help me try to build that aspect of the show up, if you guys wouldn't mind going and checking out the merch store, seeing if there's any designs that you guys really like. And of course, if there are designs that you guys would like to see about different cryptids and everything that you can't find shirts for, let me know and I could definitely work on that. And of course, I will include the link directly to that down in the show description, along with Cryptid10 to receive 10% off at checkout. And moving into front of house, if anyone has an encounter to report, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. Doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how small. I want to hear about your guys' experiences, and I'm always here to be a listening ear for you guys. And I'm just going to throw this in now because it's very important, and I want to be able to add some more onto the show and be able to read them on the show. If you guys don't mind leaving a review or rating for the show, it's a great way to support the show. And of course, if you guys leave a 5-star on iTunes, I will read on the show and give you guys a massive shout out. And something else that I also wanted to kind of do is for every 10 reviews that I get for the show, I'm going to do some type of a giveaway for those 10 different people. It'll be a matter of a raffle between those numbers. I believe it'll be 10, maybe 20, depends on how many reviews or all of that start coming in. But I want to keep promoting the show, make it so that it can get even bigger this year, and make it so that more people are coming in and sharing their experiences. And hopefully we can form an awesome community. I'm going to try to focus on that and keep building it up with you guys this year. But I won't be able to do that, of course, without any of your guys' help. And the other way you guys can support the show, since I already mentioned the Open Minds Media merch store, is through the Patreon. Updated those tiers, so there is a $1, a $3, and a $5 tier. And of course, there is a 7-day free trial available for all of those. There will probably be some more things added on coming soon that I've been kind of tossing around in my mind. But if anybody has any input as far as things they'd like to see for the Patreon, I'm always all ears, and I would absolutely love to hear about them. And if you guys enjoyed this show and you guys haven't already checked out Bizarre Encounters, highly recommend that you do. That's my other show that I do with my awesome co-host Oren, deep diving into a multitude of different topics, all kind of staying within the same realm as the stuff that we talk about on this show, of course, just done in a different format. And we also do a YouTube/Patreon exclusive show called Bizarre Inquiries. We are restructuring that a little bit, so it will have a bunch of different vibes to it depending on which episode it is, but we're kind of going to make that our catch-all for a bunch of different ideas we want to put together and all kind of fit it under the Bizarre Inquiries umbrella. So if anybody has any questions that you guys want us to discuss on that show, or if you guys have any video clips that you guys want us to discuss on that show, feel free to send those in, and I, of course, will give you a shout-out on the episode that we talk about what you sent in. And if any anybody wants to stay up to date on the show or on Open Minds Media as a whole, you guys can always check me out on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And of course, every single thing that I mentioned today is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome my good friend back to the show, Patrick Roy from Aliens for Beginners. How's it going today, man?
It's going good. Going good. Good to be back.
I'll say, absolute pleasure to have you back on the show, man. Ever since the last time you were on the show, we've just been continuously talking through social media. You pop on the Discord and everything like that, which I greatly appreciate. And you ended up becoming an admin and stuff. So I figured it was about time, man. We're due to do another show, and we should make this a semi-regular thing at least.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
I feel like we're some of those people that all have so much different stuff to talk about. It's like when we start up a conversation, I never know quite where to go with it because we have so many different rabbit holes and avenues we could go down. So,
yeah, and that's I like that about the Discord too. You can throw anything in there, get a conversation started, all kinds of interesting stuff that pops up in there.
We got to keep expanding a little bit. I think there's like five of us that pop in for the conversations. And everybody else is just like a ghost watching in the background.
Right.
But we'll get it there eventually, man. Yeah. But for anybody that may not have listened to our last episode, who may not be familiar with your podcast and what kind of stuff you talk about, why don't you let them know a little bit about your show and a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. Real quick. Just a regular guy. Started a podcast about a year and a half ago. It's called Aliens for Beginners. It's been mostly me. I'm starting to get some guests on there now. I got really lucky with some really interesting guests on there. And I finally got my YouTube channel going, so I've got some videos on there. I'd had that for about a year with absolutely nothing on it. I'm an old guy, so I'm kind of learning as I go. And I was really happy with figuring out how to do the video and getting a couple of videos on the YouTube channel there. So it's Aliens for Beginners podcast and Aliens for Beginners YouTube channel.
Man, when it comes to getting up the YouTube content, man, it's like being a podcast, people don't realize like how difficult that is. Like being a video creator, it's like one thing, but when your main form of doing your show is supposed to be like just audio and stuff, like it's so hard. It's almost like pulling teeth to make those videos sometimes, at least for me, because it's like I'm cool just broadcasting and doing the audio form. And once you get into video, it just gets too damn complicated sometimes, you know?
Yeah. And I swore that I wasn't going to do video because I was comfortable with the audio. And I started out, you know, with in the beginning, I had some help with some editing, and then my helper got busy and she wasn't able to invest time anymore. So I just went to just me and my iPhone and my earbuds, just recording straight through. And that was actually a good experience because that taught me, you know, I learned a lot doing that. And some of them were a little on the rough end, but it was all learning process. And then when I got, I found some software that works for me for video, that's, you know, basically idiot proof. then I was, let me give this a try. And, I got on TikTok. Thank God. God bless TikTok. Got a lot of good interactions on there. And I ran across my first guest that I did on video, a guy named Daniel, and he was an incredible interview, just a mind-boggling interview. I couldn't have asked for a better guest for my first one. So, you know, the journey continues.
Hey, man, that's all you can do is you just keep learning every day and just trying to expand as much as you can. Unfortunately, the videos just become part of podcasting. And it's like, for all of us that kind of went into it with the broadcasting idea, it's like you have to do this content creator part on the side. Otherwise, it's almost like you're blocking yourself off from a huge audience. So it's kind of a necessity as much as like most of us that are just audio-based just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And you were talking about that interview, and I know that you said that you got a lot of awesome information that came from that interview, and I'd love to get into that a little bit too. But before we get into that, of course, I know that since last time, you've had a bunch of different life changes that you've been working on and stuff, and it's kind of led into a bunch of new stuff that you've been researching, one of which was something that you were talking about before the show, which was a concept that hasn't really been talked about in the show. So I don't know where you want to start at with how you got into it, or if you just want to start up with the concept, but I'd love to be able to kind of get into that, to dive into a little bit of the alien stuff before we dive into the Sasquatch stuff.
Yeah, sure. So my first episode that I published on the podcast was called The Mantids for Beginners. It was about praying mantis aliens. And it wasn't the first episode I recorded. First episode I recorded was on Antarctica, but I went with these praying mantis aliens. They just kind of, they fascinated me, of this idea of this 8-foot tall praying mantis alien. So I said, look, what's something different that I don't hear a lot about that I can kind of start out with? So I went with these praying mantises, and I researched the case of Linda Porter, who was an experiencer. She talked to she sent like an information package to Linda Moulton Howe back in the 90s, mid 90s. And she related a story of, now, of course, she was a lifetime experiencer like so many others, started as a child with different types of beings. Well, she had a heart defect because her parents were some sort of fundamentalists who did not believe in doctors. And as a child, she contracted rheumatic fever, which likely developed from just an untreated case of strep throat. If you don't treat strep throat, it turns into rheumatic fever, which she was left to kind of fend for herself through this illness, and she survived it, but she ended up with heart damage. So later on, as a teenager, she was taken aboard a craft. Now, of course, a lot of this is, obtained through regression or, some people have different opinions on that. But the way that she explained it to Linda Moulton Howe was she underwent some initial kind of hypnotic regression, but then that kind of opened the door. And then as time went on, more of this stuff came to the surface without any type of hypnosis or aggression or anything like that. So pieces of it started to come to the surface. So it was an ongoing communication. But in a nutshell, she was taken aboard a craft. She was initially met with a praying mantis type alien. And these praying mantises are a lot more prolific than I thought they were. But she met this praying mantis alien who showed her what he called, or what we refer to as, a soul transfer. So he showed her a middle-aged man who appeared to be possibly deceased. Next to him was a younger version, a clone of the same man. She observed his soul come out of his body. She described it as an oblong light, and enter the new clone's body. And the praying mantis is explaining this to her, what's happening. So presumably the reason he's explaining it is because she's about to undergo the same process. So she was, her soul was moved into a new cloned body that presumably they must have gathered tissues or whatever and grew this cloned body for her. And they put her into this new body on the craft, And they even showed her defective heart from her old body. Like, they had her chest cavity open. And you know how they say, like, they always say animal mutilations are bloodless. They're precision cuts and they're bloodless and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how she described it. She described her old body as bloodless. And they actually lifted the heart and there was no blood. They showed her the defective heart. So maybe that's some technology that they have, some blood eliminating technology. I don't know.
Or so, like, it stops movement of blood altogether. So the blood's still there. It just doesn't drip or move. Doesn't
go all over the place. Yeah. So,
or it's like a cauterizing thing, possibly, if they use laser or something like that. And then maybe they have something to like reheal the cauterization. Maybe, I don't know. Just kind of throwing theories here.
Yeah. I think it's just it's an advanced technology of some sort. That's one thing they always talk about when they're talking about cow mutilations or whatever. Is, oh, it's bloodless. Well, no shit. They're smart enough to keep blood from getting all over everything. So
spaceships are always clean. They don't want blood everywhere.
So she did the soul transfer thing. So that, to me, that was fascinating, that these beings could manipulate the soul in this way. And I was also, another case I'm really interested in is Carla Turner, the late Carla Turner. She's one of my favorite figures in ufology. You know, she's left us too soon. And she was not a friend to the aliens. I don't think she ever met an alien that she liked. But when she started getting into learning about her experiences and her family's experiences, her husband, Elton, underwent a regression with, what's the lady's name? Barbara. I think her name's Barbara Bethalic. She regressed Elton, and Elton saw in this regression, I call it the ball of light regression, he saw himself as a ball of light in the presence of some gray type extraterrestrials prior to being born. He knew he was about to be born into a human body. So he said these beings were in anticipation of this event. They were getting ready for it. They were excited about it. And he also said that he had made this decision to be born into that particular incarnation, whether it was a reincarnation or whatever it was. So he's with these, we'll call them non-human intelligences. He's about to incarnate into human body. He sees himself as a ball of light, similar to the description of the soul that we got from Linda Porter. And he says that he made this decision to be born. So then you start to learn about stuff like soul paths, soul contracts, higher self, get into the Dolores Cannon stuff, the earth as a school for the soul, and folks who believe in this soul contract, soul path stuff, believe that you plan each incarnation with your spirit guides to learn whatever your next appropriate lesson is for your soul in this physical plane. So to me, it sounds like these beings, which are possibly spirit guides, or maybe some view them as angels or whatever, but these non-human intelligences are involved with the manipulation and the guidance of the soul through various incarnations. So from the Linda Porter case, we know that they're able to manipulate a soul to move it from one body to another. And incidentally, I think that had to have occurred in another dimension, in a higher dimension, another frequency or whatever.
I'm glad that you mentioned that part. This
density. Yeah, that couldn't have happened in this third density. She had to have been in another dimension in order to see that.
I'm glad you brought up that part, because I've always kind of wondered about this whole idea about kind of linking different concepts with like the paranormal with like extraterrestrial type stuff. The whole idea about the paranormal realm, as far as like, obviously it gets boosted up in a lot of TV shows, like everything's a demon, everything's this, everything's that. Like there's just so much mixed concepts that go into the paranormal. But knowing how much research the government has done into the paranormal since, you know, as far back as you can really find, they've always kind of had this weird occult ideas that they wanted to see if they actually worked, all this. I've been kind of curious if they have an understanding about how to do this kind of stuff. And in turn, they basically just let people throw whatever information they want at the wall as far as the paranormal goes. But they actually have an understanding of the fact that this paranormal realm, this behind the veil area, is almost like the temporary waiting room to be able to move consciousness into something else. And of course, you know, they say that once you come into your life, you don't remember all of your experiences in this other realm. So if you're an elite and you're, you know, working at trying to be able to stay in this realm, keep doing what you're doing, you completely forget that you do this stuff naturally. So in turn, you start trying to develop technology to be able to do it yourself. And then that's where you get into all this weird stuff with the elites, where it's like, you know, royalty, for example, they'll have like three generations of males that all have the same little weird mannerisms they do and stuff. And I've been kind of curious that it's like a matter of their transferring consciousness into younger versions of themselves, not wanting to restart a whole life, be something totally different in a different period of time. They want to continue what they're doing within this lifetime. And they're basically just trying to manipulate it where they can do this kind of stuff back to back. And possibly even still remember their memories from their past life, because they're the ones transferring the consciousness instead of these angels or spirit guides or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Well, I think absolutely there are people who know about this stuff. So these are the deepest, darkest, well, not necessarily dark, but the deepest secrets that we're talking about. This is the real stuff that they don't want to get out. Origin of man stuff, the soul, these really deep things. These are the really deep things that they'll never tell you. They'll never tell you what they know about that. So if you go back to like the 50s and 60s of the nuts and bolts era of the flying saucers, and that was easy to counter by just debunking the witnesses, and we'll talk about weather balloons and make the witnesses out to be crazy. So you got your straight up nuts and bolts flying saucers era. So as time has progressed and more stuff has come out, then by 2016, you've got this controlled narrative coming out with the New York Times article and the UAP videos, even Skinwalker Ranch and the whistleblowers, the congressional hearing, all that kind of stuff. But the real stuff that they don't want you to know is what I think the crux of it is in what we're talking about here. And I don't know that they fully understand it. I think there's probably a handful of people who have a pretty good understanding of it. And that's part of why they're able to kind of manipulate, you know, this reality.
I mean, I did an episode on Bizarre Encounters, and I think it'll end up dropping before this one does. If anybody wants to kind of walk through my whole big walkthrough of the theory, I kind of brushed a little bit with you before we started, but I kind of lined up this concept that first you had like LSD that was discovered 1938, but supposedly was put on the shelf until 1943. And then in the middle of that, of course, was when World War II was happening. And of course, during World War II was when a lot of this secret Nazi experimentation was happening. Some of the ones that kind of stuck out to me was that they were doing stuff for sterilization and fertilization. They're also doing things where they were trying to like pull muscles out of people to see if they could replace them and just do all this kind of weird, very reminiscent of like UFO type stuff. So then directly after that, of course, is Operation Paperclip. And that happened in, I believe it was 1945 until 1951 was that was when that was supposedly happening. And then right after that, of course, is when the UFO phenomenon starts happening as far as being written about in books and everything like that, kind of just pushing it in a totally different direction. And going back a little bit, because I didn't tell this fully in order, 1936 was supposedly when that weird UFO crash happened in Germany, and then people after that started claiming that they're seeing these weird zero gravity Nazi ships, aka like the Die Glock and stuff. So they had this whole idea about zero gravity weird machinery. So then right after that, you jump back forward again into like MK Ultra when they were doing more experimentation on LSD and all these different psychotropic drugs, trying to figure out what they would do to like the human psyche and everything. But I definitely think that the Nazis were already working on this stuff back when they were doing all the weird off the wall experiments and everything. And of course, after World War II, they made it so that all of this kind of stuff was outlawed. You can't do this type of research on people, even though they were trying to justify it by saying they were doing it for the good of mankind and not doing it for malevolent reasons. And then right after that, you have like the Benny and Barney Hill case, where they claim that they, well, Barney specifically said that he saw two people wearing black suits or black clothing with like black hats, which sounds very reminiscent of like Nazi uniform. And then going into like Pascagoula, for example, they talk about how they, the one man saw the female one that was in the craft and claimed that he saw like a mask line or something that looked like a mask line on her neck. So there's just all these weird little like things that seem like what we, I'm not saying it's all the phenomenon, but I think a good portion of the phenomenon that's currently happening could be continuations of all of this Nazi research they're trying to do, because obviously you can't just openly do this kind of stuff to people. And if they're trying to figure out how to, for example, like transfer consciousness into another body, completely replace muscles, get rid of complete illnesses and everything like that, it's all the weird stuff that's happening on UFOs, but nobody's just going to voluntarily join and do all of this kind of stuff. So they run all of these secret programs, make people think that they're potentially on UFOs while they have them under psychotropic drugs, and leading into like the whole idea about how they could talk to people in their head and everything. Supposedly there was the voice of God that was created back in the 1930s, but it wasn't patented until 1974, which was right after when all of the like weird main UFO cases were happening, where they were communicating with people telepathically. So I think they worked and still develop all this technology, and then it doesn't get released until it's fully established. And again, just going back around to it, I think that a lot of the weird UFO phenomenon is continuation of Nazi experimental research, and they're just hiding some of it under the mask of UFOs. And I think it's a two-faceted thing that too, that they'll talk about the whole idea with abductions, that somebody will get abducted multiple nights in a row, but they'll see different types of extraterrestrials on multiple nights. I think there's a good possibility that there is extraterrestrials actually doing stuff. And then right after that happens, the government comes in to check out that person to see what they may have done to them, to see if they can get anything else from them, for example. And kind of leading into more of like the modern day ideas too, with not necessarily having to use like a solid psychotropic. You have things like the Havana syndrome, the whole thing where they're using like frequencies and stuff like that. And then you have like bilingual beats, for example, that'll supposedly give you different highs from playing different frequencies in your head. And going into the UFO phenomenon now, it seems like there's a lot of tones, pitch, frequencies, and then people start seeing these extraterrestrials. So I think that there's a good side of it, again, where it is extraterrestrial. But on the other side, I think that these government organizations take advantage of what's happening to make it so that they can continue their research in the dark, essentially. And then anybody that comes out and starts trying to talk about this stuff, it's aliens, like there's nothing that ties it back to them. And they're able to just do whatever the hell they want.
Right. And I mean, that's a convenient thing to always have. It's just similar to what we're talking about with Freemasonry and whatnot. Somebody you can pin it on. But there's another thing that fits in that timeline around the time of Paperclip, and that was Operation High Jump.
Yep.
So that was I think it was 1947. So right in around that same time, and that allegedly involves Nazi alien technology and a battle with conventional planes up in Antarctica.
I mean, so, even on the other side too, half the people they took during Operation Paperclip were the people that were working on a lot of these like secret flying devices, yeah, things like that too. So it's like they, yeah, pulled them right over too. So anything that, yeah, they would have had technology wise, they would have just transferred over and then continued the research on. And they brought their whole families in and they tried to, you know, get them to readjust to like American culture. But if you're doing work like that, it transcends loyalty to any specific country. Like if you're a person doing this research, you end up passing it on to your kids and then your kids continue on the research. And it's not something that's like, you're just going to adjust to the way that we live life here. It's like their main focus is this research. And that's what their entire family's focus is generation, mm-hmm, to generation. It doesn't matter what their loyalties are. They want, right, to develop what they're trying to develop.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. And, what was his name? Werner von Braun.
That was one of the main guys they brought over, who was, yeah, also working with Jack Parsons at the time too.
And he was the father of the Nazi rocket technology or whatever, but I think he was working on some other stuff. And there was a CIA whistleblower who, the guy they called Anonymous, I don't know if you're familiar with him, mm-hmm, he was he did like a deathbed type confession, and he said that all of that rocket stuff is just a sideshow.
Because I mean, Jack Parsons was doing a bunch of sideshow. Yeah, he was doing a bunch of like occult research, and it was rocketry. But on the other side, this guy was trying to open portals through using this kind of shit. Yeah. So I mean,
yeah. And then you get into, oh good lord, once you go down that rabbit hole, you've got the Apollo missions and all the stuff that even now we look back, it doesn't make any damn sense. You know,
like when they shot the rocket to the moon and it rung out too, like,
yeah, oh yeah, Chapel Bell, yeah, Operation Chapel Bell, they dropped a section of I think it was Apollo, I forget which mission it was, it might have been Apollo 12, but they dropped a section of the rocket that they didn't need. It hit the moon and it rang for an hour, which would indicate a hollow metallic object. But there's a lot, that's a whole other subject. There's a lot of shit going on with the moon. But
it's cheese. That's what my daughter said today. I just had to throw that in because I thought it was really funny. So my daughter goes, did you know some people believe the moon is cheese? I'm like,
it might as well be cheese, right?
I was like, well, I think it's a base, but yes, whatever you say, honey.
Well, there was an interview recently where some NASA guy, he was being interviewed or questioned by Congress or something. He was seated before Congress and they were asking him some shit. It was recent. I mean, within the past couple of years. And,
was that, what's his name? Was it not Greer? Was it Greer?
No,
it was the whole thing that was coming out where they, basically established the whole thing that if anybody comes out and talks about UFOs, that you're going to be safe or whatever. What was that guy's name? Now,
this dude was, he was in an official NASA capacity. So he was working for NASA. He was speaking on behalf of NASA. And I don't know what the reason was that he was before Congress, but this guy was a NASA official. I can't remember his name. And someone asked him about the Chinese probe going to the dark side of the moon.
It wasn't Grush, right? That's when I was thinking of David Grush.
No. This is a real NASA guy. He's a NASA official. He still works for NASA. And he was answering questions in that capacity before Congress. So someone asked him about the Chinese probe going to the moon. And he said, they're going over to the far side of the moon. He said, we're not planning on going there. He said that like a few times, like, we're not planning on going there. I'm like, why the fuck wouldn't you plan on going there? Like, aren't you NASA? If China's going to the dark side of the moon, what, don't you want to go see what they're looking at over there? So he said, we're not going there. So
I mean, how many astronauts came out and said that they saw weird stuff on the surface? Like,
yeah, there's
the original mission
going on up there. Yeah.
They're talking about how they saw little like ship looking things that were like on the edge of like one of the craters. And they're also saying they're hearing music through their headset when they were about to land. But that's a whole other thing, whether or not we actually went to the moon or not. But supposedly this was stuff that was in the recordings.
Well, William Mills Tompkins said that some reptilians were standing on the edge of the crater, gave them the finger. Flipped Neil off.
See, I think it's one of those things that I think that no matter what, we had something filmed that if we didn't make it to the moon, we didn't want Russia to make it to the moon first. So we're going to stage it that we went to the moon, regardless if we did or didn't make it or not. But on the other side of it, people question whether or not we actually went. I think that we may have actually went. And then once we started seeing this weird shit, then we flip to the fake recording. So people may have seen the initial takeoff and everything, but I don't think we've actually seen any of the real lunar footage. I think we saw the recording because once they got there, shit started getting weird and they weren't trying to have something broadcasted on live TV that they weren't fully aware of at the time. And that's why we supposedly lost all of the tapes of the original lunar landing, which if you're NASA, how the fuck do you do that? Like the only recordings to the public is stuff off the news. Like there's just so much weirdness behind that. I think we did go. And we just didn't show any of that footage. And what everybody has seen and what fucks everybody up is the fact that we had fake footage no matter what. Because even if it blew up mid-flight, we didn't want Russia to beat us there. So we're going to play this footage regardless.
Yeah. And that would be an astonishingly poor management decision to fake footage of something that you actually accomplished.
So unless shit got weird
later and say how fake it is. But that would not surprise me at all. But you know, in have you read The Day After Roswell, the Corso book?
I don't think I have. No.
In The Day After Roswell, Corso has a whole chapter on the moon, ironically chapter 11. And I say ironically because it damn near bankrupted us, right, going to the moon. But
we have the technology to get to Mars, but we don't have the technology to get to the moon. Remember what they've been saying the last couple of years. Like, how does that make sense? One takes 3 days to get to, one takes 6 months. Like,
Well, he talks about this moon stuff, and the primary driver, according to Corso, was, like you said, the beating Russia there. It was a military thing. So there were two camps. There were those that were in the know, and for them it was get a leg up on extraterrestrial presence. Then there were those that were not in the know, and for them it was to beat Russia to the moon, establish a base on the moon before Russia did. They didn't want Russia establishing a base on the moon before we did, and then we got there, and Russia says, you know, we've already claimed it, this is ours. So we want to get there first and establish a base, and they had a whole plan.
Most people forget, technically, Russia got something on the surface of the moon first. It was just we were the first to get people on the moon.
Right.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
They had a plan called Project Horizon that was supposed to start in 1965. They were supposed to put a couple guys on the moon to build a structure, some kind of prefab structure that they could then put a dozen astronauts in and then kind of go from there and establish this base. But the primary driver was military, either Russia or extraterrestrials, because they saw the extraterrestrials as a threat. Now Corso said that throughout the whole all of the moon missions, the whole time of the Apollo missions, that we were continually harassed by extraterrestrials in one way or another, by flying by, buzzing the craft, their physical presence. Basically, according to Corso, they didn't want us there, and they made it clear in no uncertain terms they did not want us on the moon.
Which makes sense why we built the space station instead of something on the moon, because my logic is, if you could build a space station, there's no reason why you wouldn't be able to build something on the moon that's equal or equivalent to it. So it's like, why?
The space station was most likely more expensive and complex to put into action than a base on the moon would have been. And
And it's 3 days. So it's a matter of supply drops. Like, you can easily do supply drops in 3 days. I mean, you try to get stuff to the other side of the world to get to soldiers, and that takes 3 days. So it's like,
there's no legitimate reason why, you know, we haven't been back to the moon, assuming that we went in the first place, you know, like you said. So it's complicated.
There's just too many weird spots about it that, I don't think anybody's going to get the full story unless you're fully in the know, but there's just too many things to question to follow the main narrative. And even if it's not as extravagant as what some of us try to play it out to be, there's still so much weirdness to it that they're hiding something. Even if it's like, I don't know, even something just basic, like there was a dead civilization on the moon that they're like, oh shit, somebody's already been here before. Like, they're hiding something.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Personally, I think it's probably like the biggest known secret. I think there's probably a lot of people, relatively speaking, in government, intelligence, private corporations, whatever, contractors, who do know. I think there are probably a lot of people who do know something about what's going on the moon, because even when that guy said that before Congress, it was almost like, oh, well, we're not planning on going there. Like he was talking to people who knew, right? Oh, no, don't worry. We're not planning on going there.
Who is that hacker that they really wanted to get back from the UK who broke into basically like the database for like the US government? And he found all of these records for like people that said, like, it had names. Then it said like off world for all these different people.
And
the US government is trying to get their hands on this guy, but the UK government wouldn't give him up. Like, just weird little things like that kind of makes you wonder, is it like off world, like on the space station? Because I don't think there's enough room for people like that. Right. Or is it off world that they actually have a base and it's just a huge kept secret because they don't want any, no country wants anybody to know if they have an establishment there, because it's one of those things that when push comes to shove, then they'll expose themselves. But till then, they're just going to lie and wait and pretend like nothing's there.
Right. Well, there was also that private, I think it was this year, like February this year, there was a probe, some private probe that actually landed on the moon. As soon as it got there, it tripped over a rock and fell over and broke. It's like they forgot there were rocks on the fucking moon. There's rocks on the fucking moon. You got to make something that's not going to trip over when it break as soon as it lands. I mean, that's absurd.
Even on the other side, though, it's like you have so much robot technology. You think that one of the first things that you would develop on a Mars probe, on a moon probe, would be something that is like an arm that comes out that flips it back over. You know, like, it seems like just basic understanding that if you're going to be...
Oh, shit, it fell over.
Yeah, like, if it's in the middle of somewhere that you have no way of actually touching it again, why would you not give it some form or way to be able to roll itself back over? You're essentially throwing a turtle, and then you're like, oh, fuck, it fell over. Like,
it's like a fucking cartoon or something. Like, really? I don't know. Another interesting thing when you're looking at your timeline there, and that this might be a stretch, but War of the Worlds.
I actually had that into my notes too.
The 1938 broadcast of War of the Worlds. I actually did an episode on that. It's not up right now, but I think there's ample evidence that that might have been some sort of first generation psyop.
I literally talked about that when I put all this stuff together, so I'm glad you're on the same method of thinking as that, because that was almost like a social experiment, and then later on they're like, hey, we can use this.
Orson Welles and FDR were tight too. FDR and Orson Welles, they were buds. They were best buds. So yeah, there's a lot of dots there to connect.
And even like the beginning of the show where they had the intro, they said, oh, this is just a fun broadcasting. Like, you think they would have tried to tell people that a bit more going through it, where even if they did like ad breaks, they would have been like, this is all for fiction. Like, they purposely only said it once, very short in the beginning, and then just ran with it.
Right.
So that then it's like plausible deniability, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, oh, wait, we went on a tangent.
Hey, that's always some of the most fun stuff, though, because you never know what you're going to end up getting into.
Yeah. So, the soul, the human soul, the soul contracts. It's possible that some sort of non-human intelligence, extraterrestrial intelligence, is involved in the whole reincarnation directing of the soul process.
I mean, it may not even be as connected as we think. I mean, it may even be something like they full well know that these are just biological probes that they've created, and like the actual us is those, but they purposely have us go into these physical forms that we're trapped in a physical reality, and then it's easier to control cattle that way, you know?
Right.
If you're this infinite being that can transcend dimensions, like, good luck controlling that. If you're a physical thing that's stuck in one place, way easier. And then on top of that, within the physical realm, you create borders, you create this, you create that, and it's just like you condense people into smaller and smaller areas.
And if you really want to get deep into it, then you've got the whole Dolores Cannon theory that there's a multifaceted oversoul, whether that's your higher self or whatever, but she says that the soul is multifaceted and that each facet can split off and go into a different incarnation, not even necessarily like on this earth, but maybe on another planet or another universe or somewhere else. And that all of these incarnations, all of these lives, because time is not necessarily, you know, linear, are being lived at the same time. So, I mean, that's a mind boggler there. It's like,
I thought about that, or even the multidimensional concept, that maybe like there is the soul fraction concept, but it's living in multiple realities at the same time. And that's where you get into these like infinite universes, is that you're split, but you theoretically die in all of them at once. And then your consciousness reconnects. And that's when you're able to remember everything. Because if you just put little pieces of something everywhere, of course you're not going to recollect all of it. But as soon as you reunite again, then you're able to recollect all of it again.
And then you've got this whole quantum jumping thing. I don't know a whole lot about that, but that's a thing. Like you can theoretically jump into another timeline where, say if you wanted to be, you needed money or you wanted to be wealthy, you could theoretically jump into another timeline where you are wealthy, learn how to get wealthy, then come back into this one and apply that stuff that you learn. I don't know. There's this, they advertise it on YouTube. There's like a program you can buy. This old guy's like, have you seen that? He's like 80 years old. I can't remember his name. I think he passed away, but he's like the original quantum jumper. Like he learned how to play piano. He learned how to paint and all this stuff. I don't know.
Man, I've had a weird quantum experience before. I know I've talked to you a little bit about it before with my whole like astral travel experiences and everything that I'd had as a kid. And this happened probably like 4 or 5 years ago now. I had this weird experience where like I went to sleep and I basically kept dimension hopping into new places. And every single time I was in those, I kept trying to look for my girlfriend. And every time I'd find her, but it wasn't quite her. It was like a different version of her. It was like her, but different. And I kept going to sleep and I'd wake up and be in a new one, go to sleep, wake up, be in a new one. And it felt like this lasted like a couple months and I couldn't get back home. And then I finally got back home. I had sleep paralysis and I woke up and I was like tearing up and shit because I finally like made it back to Gabby. And usually I connect my astral travel stuff with having sleep paralysis directly after, but that was probably honestly one of the most horrifying experiences that I've ever gone through, because I know a lot of people are going to say it was a dream, but when you're there, it doesn't feel like that. And when you keep going to sleep and waking up and you're in a new place, like it's hard to explain how horrifying that is, that you feel like there's this endless cycle that you may never make it back. Like it's such a weird experience. Like I haven't actually talked to too many other people who have actually gone through something like that. So it's like, it's hard to explain to somebody and not sound like you're just batshit crazy talking about it.
Yeah. I'm at least a dreamer. Not all the time, but frequently. And the weirdest, not that I don't think that dreaming is necessarily dreaming. I think maybe we are going into these other realities.
I've definitely thought about that myself too.
I think that we do, to some extent, kind of leave our bodies and do this traveling. But the The weirdest ones for me, though, are where I know I'm in a dream. I realize I'm in a dream. And then I'm like, okay, I got to get out of this. So then I will myself to wake up. Then I'm awake, but I'm still dreaming. So I dream that I wake up, but I'm still dreaming, and then wake up from that. That's rough, man. That's brutal.
That's kind of like what that experience was like for me, man.
Yeah. Like what just happened?
Man, every time I've ever tried to lucid dream and I become aware that I'm in a dream, I have this weird thing that happens where like the dream will go into like overdrive, if you want to even call it a dream. But like one of them, I know I've talked about on the show a few times, but I was at this house and I was with my girlfriend's sister and she came up and like kissed me. And I'm just like, what the fuck is happening here? And then my girlfriend Gabby walked through the door and she was with her boyfriend. And I was like, all right, this isn't right. Like I'm in a dream or something. So I went into the bathroom and I'm like, I'm in a dream. I'm going to wake myself up. I'm going to control this. And as soon as I started doing it, I looked at my hands and I'm like, all right, I'm going to control it. Then all of a sudden all the walls dropped out and I was in the middle of space and I just started blasting through space at a fast rate. And every single time I've ever become aware that I'm in a dream or in the dreamscape, that happens every single time. Like something else like pulls me the other way and goes, oh hell no, not today, man. And I've never realized how horrified I am of flying through space at a fast rate. Like it's right. One of those subconscious fears that it's like, I don't think about it, but anytime I've ever been in that situation, like I can't think of anything more horrifying. And like, it's gotten to the point where like when the VRs were popular for a while, that you connect with your phone and everything, there's this one app I had on it where it was like the solar system and you could click on the planets. And when you clicked on the planets, you'd like fly from one planet to the other at like a fast rate. And I almost had like PTSD and like freaked out and had to take the helmet off when I started doing that because it reminded me of all these experiences I had when I tried to control my lucid dreams. We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over. So don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
So getting back to those praying mantises, I re-edited that episode and I put my new intro and outro on it and I republished it, kind of polished it up some. And so to promote it, I made a little slideshow to put on TikTok, and I put a little slideshow just kind of just describing the Linda Porter case with some pictures and just in a nutshell, what I just talked about in Linda Porter case. I don't know how or why, but that, like right now, that thing's got like 32,000 views and like 1,200 some likes and 150 some bookmarks. And, And I got like maybe 90 comments in there, but there were some very relevant comments in there. There were people like, oh yeah, I've seen that. Oh yeah. I've run into them. And then they're like, oh yeah, people see those in DMT trips all the time. And, so all of this interest in these praying mantis aliens and that's actually how I met Daniel, because he talked about some of his experience in the comment section. That's when I messaged him and said, hey, come on my show. But I was like, this is such a weird niche kind of off the wall topic. I'm like, so many people are like into this, not only interested in it, but they've seen these things. And it's pretty fascinating. But those particular beings, like there's glyphs all over the world of praying mantis beings. I think in Egyptian mythology, they were some sort of guides of the soul in the afterlife or underworld or something like that. So there's a lot of lore associated with these praying mantis beings and the soul. So it's, it makes you wonder if what's been going on. And then some of the, I think Linda Moulton Howe interviewed a government guy who said, well, some of those are androids, similar to the small grays. And, so he said they're androids. They're built to oversee experiments that last thousands of years. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because every single time I've ever dived into the mantises, like reading all my books and everything, most of them, they seem like watchers. Like they watch from a distance, and when they're seen, they disappear. And diving into some other like cryptid related stuff, you have like the mantis man that the fishermen saw, and there was like multiple people that had seen this thing, and they both, all of them that saw it basically said this thing just like phased out and like disappeared. So then again, that makes you wonder, like, if they're watching, their whole intention is to watch from a distance and they get seen, or they have the ability to just phase out of a different reality, or they have like some type of self cloaking ability, which doesn't seem far off.
I think they have the ability, that's similar to what's described, with the reptilians. That I think they can make you see different things. So a cloaking ability that maybe it works in the mind somehow, where they can, I think they can appear as Nordics. They can appear as humans. I listened to a podcast, I think it might've been Into the Fray, where she was interviewing an experiencer. I think it was a two-parter. I can't remember the lady's name, the guest, but, particular guest that she had some Carla Turner level experiences, and she described a disc flying into her room. She I don't know if it was sleep paralysis, but she was in her bed. She couldn't move. She could only move her head. A golden disc came into her room, went to the other side of her bed. Beautiful blonde woman appeared. And she said to this woman, I guess telepathically, well, I know that's not what you really look like. And the woman said, if you want to see what I really look like, look out the window. She turned to look out the window. There's a praying mantis. So they're all over the place. David Huggins, who, I don't know if you're familiar with that name.
I've heard the name before.
He's the guy. He's a painter. He's an artist. But he had like a long-term relationship with female extraterrestrial, allegedly, named Crescent. And he fathered like a whole bunch of kids with this Crescent, starting from when he was like a teenager. And
was he the one that did the paintings of him having like intercourse with extraterrestrials?
Yep,
with the blue backgrounds.
That's the guy. Yeah, that's the guy. And he said during every one of his rendezvous with Crescent, there was a praying mantis in the room. So how fucking weird is that?
Like he was never actually interacting with this Crescent, but rather it was like the mantis just letting him see what it wanted him to see.
I don't know.
But, or it was like a cuck situation, like the Mantis and Crescent were actually together, and he's like, all right, you can have my female for a bit. I'm going to watch in the corner.
I don't know what the hell. But it was, I mean, it was.
Hey, aliens can have kinks too, man.
Observer of some sort. But no, that's pretty damn weird. But that guy has there's a movie. I think it's called, I think it's called Love and Saucers. It's about David Huggins' story. It's actually a really good documentary.
I've heard that heard of that movie before, but I've never watched it.
Love and Saucers. Yeah, it's actually really good. I would recommend it. And the guy, he's very likable. He's just likable as hell. It's a really good documentary to check out.
I mean, that kind of leads into a lot of the stuff that I talk about with a lot of shapeshifters, is that I don't see it as much of a possibility that something has the ability to completely change its physical form, but rather I think that a lot of these things that we call shapeshifters just have the ability to alter people's perceptions, or they know how to alter people's perceptions. Like the whole skinwalker thing. I know most people have this whole idea about these like weird, lanky, like alien type beings and everything. But if you actually dive into it, it's essentially like an evil medicine man is the best way to describe it, who would like wear different furs and stuff, and people would see that animal. So I think that the whole skinwalker phenomenon isn't what they chalk it up to be. Like, I think it's all like misdirection. I think that the skinwalker phenomenon is a matter of like actual people who are shamans, medicine men, all of this, that have learned the ability to change people's perception into seeing whatever they want them to see. And in turn, they can do whatever malevolent acts they want to do under the cloak of looking like a wolf or looking like a deer or looking like a crazed person from the 1800s chasing you, you know, through the middle of the desert, like they claim happens at Skinwalker Ranch and stuff. So, I mean, and I definitely think this is something that's been like passed on through generations, because you get into the whole Skinwalker talk with the Navajo and they really don't want to talk about it. I listened to, I think it was on Hollow Sky, they had somebody who was a Navajo who actually lives on the reservations and stuff, and he was kind of giving as much of the background as he could, and he basically said that, you know, it's still an ongoing fight that we try to take these people out, and they're not as you perceive that they are. Like, skinwalkers will just be some average guy that lives next door to you, but at night he's doing totally different shit than you never expect him to do. Like, they're normal people that have this weird occult knowledge, for lack of a better term. But I mean, it makes sense with the whole idea of skinwalker. I mean, you break down the name and you're walking in the skin of something else. And that goes into a bunch of different stuff. Like, I had Robbie Marks on a while ago, and he started diving into a lot of the skinwalker stuff, but he was looking at it from the biblical perspective, like he does for a lot of stuff. And he was talking about Nimrod wearing like Adam's skin and stuff like that, and was claiming that Nimrod may have been the first like skinwalker. It just wasn't called that, even though he was doing the same thing that they were claiming. It's just a matter of him wearing Adam's skin, aka another person, versus an animal, where of course the native stuff is going to be a lot more animal based, like a lot of their belief system is, where assumably if you can do it with one type of animal, you could do it with any type of animal. So if you were able to collect human skin, you'd be assumably be able to do the same thing.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what to make of the whole skinwalker thing. Those type of cryptids, that's up there with the Wendigo. I like the Wendigo. I think the Wendigo is my favorite cryptid, because he's just so fucking mysterious and looks like a fucking deer. And I mean, what's scarier than an upright fucking deer walking around with a skeleton? I mean, that's pretty scary.
Dude, that whole thing's been misconstrued through time too, man. Like, I did a 3-part series on Wendigos, and of course, you know, every different tribe has different names for the same type of beings and stuff like that. But, you know, the way that we view Wendigos now, with the whole deer headed, all that kind of stuff, was actually brought to being through settlers coming through and retelling these stories and putting their own like pagan twist on it to make it seem like it was evil. You know, just like taking all of these like holy areas or ritual grounds, sacred grounds that the natives had, and calling it like devil's this, devil's that. Because the way the natives described the Wendigos was that they were these lanky, like zombie-like looking creatures that would like eat their own like lips off and everything. They described them as human-like, lanky, zombie-looking beings. They never described them as the deer-headed beings until the white settlers came through and started retelling these stories and putting their twist on it. So, and
weren't they supposed to like personify the white settlers to some degree? Like that, like they were this consuming, you know, always hungry, almost like a swarm of locust type of people, and the the emaciated, always hungry Wendigo kind of represented the white man to the Native Americans in terms of just consuming all the resources in the land and everything like that. I think I read something about that tie-in.
I'll have to dive back. I think that the stories were older than when the settlers started coming, but if they started popping up around the time settlers were coming, right. I mean, you know, with a lot of like the native stuff, it can be taken two ways. It's like, it's either a metaphor for something or it's literal, which is the hard part when you're trying to decipher all of this old Native American folklore is like, is this particular story a metaphor for something or is it a literal thing for something? Because there's right. like the whole Cherokee story about why the possum has the naked tail and stuff. Like, it's a metaphor for basically not having too much pride. But then on the other side, it's like within that same book, you'll find stories about like Wendigos or like Thunderbirds or Uktena and stuff like that. And it's just like, is this a metaphor like the other story or is this literal? Like, you don't know which way to take it. So it's like hard to decipher right. it. And it's been an oral thing that's been passed down for so long that a lot of these native stories, like I've been trying to get somebody on that's like native to come on and tell these stories. And it's almost fucking impossible to get somebody to come on and tell this stuff because they keep it close to the chest and within their tribe right. and within their family.
And that's a wealth of untapped, mysterious stuff there. I mean, if you could break into that, I mean, that's like a whole world waiting to be explored there.
Dude, I found a website that I did a lot of my research on, and basically it's all of like a folklore website, but there was a bunch of different shit that you actually had to put in like your card information saying that you're like a registered native to a specific tribe and stuff like that. Otherwise you couldn't access like 90% of the website. And the one thing that I found weird that you couldn't click on at all to even get a simple definition of, unless you were logged in and you had your proof that you are native, was the Skinwalker one. Like, it wasn't even, you couldn't even click on it on that website. Like, you had to log in to view anything about it.
Wow. That's interesting.
And the fucked up part is, man, my grandma was 100% Cherokee, like I always mention on the show. But she was part of like the Red Clay, which was down in Georgia. And that was like the last front before the Trail of Tears. So basically what she told me growing up was that because they tried to use the white laws against them in order to keep their land, they basically said, fuck you. And they didn't register the Red Clay as a tribe. So because they were the last one that tried to hold up a front, they didn't register them. So she basically said that our tribe isn't registered because we tried to fight that last battle and we were the last front before the Trail of Tears. So it's like when I grew up, she had the Trail of Tears statues all over the house. And she basically said like, never forget stuff like that. So it was like,
wow.
I'm 25%, but I don't feel like it's enough for me to be able to like take in that heritage and say it's me, right. even though I heard all these stories from my grandma growing up. But the messed up part is technically like I was part of the tribe. We used to go to powwows and stuff like that when I was a kid. But again, it's not a registered tribe. Like, they won't let it be. So it's like, even if I was still fully active in this stuff, I still wouldn't be able to access that website.
Wow. That's really interesting. Huh. So when I was a kid, we lived on a piece of property that my parents bought. This piece of property is 30 acres in Maryland, and it had a heavy Native American presence on it. We would always find like arrowheads and pottery shards, and I think it was the University of Delaware came and like did a dig there at one point. And there was even like a trail that supposedly the Indians used. It was like this elongated mound that went down to a creek. But and I lived there for like 11 years. I wondered like what kind of, you know, later on I wondered what kind of lingering kind of spiritual effects did it have, you know, living, being immersed in that environment for that time. But
can you imagine how haunted the Trail of Tears is all the way through? Because they basically got pushed from one side of the country all the way to the other side of the country. Yeah. No supplies, no food, not throwing clothing. So it was just like they're just dropping on the trail and they would just leave them, you know, like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people realize how fucked up the whole Trail of Tears concept is until you actually hear it from a native perspective. It's like everybody knows the term Trail of Tears and you don't put too much thought into it. But that's like one of the most fucked up things that's ever happened in. I'm not saying it is the most fucked up, but it's definitely one of the most fucked up things that's happened in U.S. history. And Jackson, that's the guy in the 20, right? Jackson?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, he was one of the people that pushed that into action, and he basically said they don't deserve rights, they're savages. And the fucked up part is, it's like every time I see a 20, like my grandma told me this. So it's just like this fucking piece of shit got his face on a 20, but he called basically my grandma's entire side of the family's lineage savage and said they had no claim to the land, even though they were here and you guys came in and stole it from them.
Right. Yeah. I think there was a move to get him off of that, off the $20 bill.
Fuck. We've taken Columbus off of everything. Might as well take him off of everything too. Like, fuck that guy. Like,
No, I mean, the whole story of the indigenous people, I mean, it's pretty brutal. And I remember watching a documentary about some place in Florida where this Native American civilization existed, and there was a bog or something that they used for a burial ground, and that they used the same.
It wasn't Huckamuck Swamp, was it?
I don't know the name of it, but it was used for a burial ground for like thousands of years. It just boggles your mind to think of it when you think this country is what, going on 300 years old or whatever.
Barely. Yeah.
That these people buried their dead in the same place for thousands of years, before we came and destroyed it all. I mean, that's pretty amazing to think about.
Well, I mean, think about how many Native American burial grounds have just been covered up by concrete. Like, there's one in Defiance, Ohio that I had somebody talk about recently, where they said they were building a Walmart there, and rather than, like, relocating everything, they said, that's going to cost too much. Just cover it all in concrete. And that's the parking lot now. There's a burial ground underneath the damn parking lot of that Walmart in Defiance, Ohio.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
There was some... in Delaware, close to where I live, there's a place called the Island Field Site. It was an Indian burial ground that they excavated. And when I was a kid in school in the 70s, we'd go there for field trips. And they had a building over it, and you could walk around and look down into this excavated Indian burial ground. And it was huge. And I think it was in like 1986, they closed it up. The Native American tribes in Delaware wanted it closed up because they felt it was disrespectful or whatever. But to me, I'm like, hey, man, they should let that damn thing open. You know, people should be able to go and look at that, you know, and it gives them some perspective, you know, on what was here before.
I mean, I could definitely see both sides of that argument. Yeah. That one, you know, leave the dead to rest, but on the other side, be aware of the history. You know, it's kind of like a catch-22. Like, you're wrong and you're right both ways.
So, speaking of Native Americans, I'm sure you know that every North American tribe has a word for Sasquatch.
Yep.
In their dialect.
I actually grew up with my grandma telling me stories about Sasquatch and basically saying that, like, they all used to interact. And then once the white settlers came, they basically said, like, you guys have the choice of getting rid of them and staying with us. Or if you guys start trading and interacting with the white settlers, you guys aren't going to have any kind of communication with us ever again. And that's supposedly how it went down. And yeah, that was what my 100% Cherokee grandma told me, that she said that she heard from her grandma, and it just passed on through generations.
So the Sasquatch gave them the choice. Either you want to hang out with them or you want to hang out with us, basically.
Yep. Pretty much said, if you guys start trading and interacting with them, you're not going to have interactions with us anymore.
Wow. Well, that totally fits in with everything that I'm learning about Bigfoot, Sasquatch.
And on the other side, too, there is a Cherokee legend, too, that was saying that if you want to make contact, you would go out in the woods and you'd sing this particular song in Cherokee tongue. And then in turn, I think that it was the water babies, like the weird little creatures, they would basically decide if you were good enough to be able to interact with the Sasquatch. And then you'd sing this other song, and the other song would call them in. And once they got lured in and called in, they would do this thing where you touch their fingertip and they'd give you knowledge for the year on, like, this area is going to flood. Don't plant your crops here. There's going to be a drought at this time, so make sure you guys try to reserve water and do this and that. And they would basically, like, bestow this knowledge on the people, but they would have to do this like ceremony where they'd sing these two songs, one to catch their attention and call them in. And basically the second song would be telling them like, I'm okay, I'm not going to hurt you. And then once they came up close enough, you touch fingertips and then you'd be bestowed this knowledge on the land essentially for the year.
Okay. Well, that ties in with a lot of what I've recently learned that, I mean, I'm just learning that apparently they're interdimensional, they're telepathic, they're psychic in terms of they can tell you what's going to happen in the future, as opposed to telepathic as a means of communication. So there's a whole, there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot to these beings. And what you just described sounds a lot like, what Ray Dove, who I just recently interviewed, did. And she set out to go out and like do like, almost like a CE5 self-initiated contact with Sasquatch. Now, she was a Sasquatch skeptic. She didn't necessarily believe that Sasquatch existed, but she got this idea from that guy Bashar, the guy that channels Bashar, if you're familiar with him. This guy channels this being Bashar. And I follow him on social media. It's pretty damn interesting. But she got this idea from this dude, Bashar, when someone asked him about contacting extraterrestrials. And Bashar said, well, yeah, you can contact extraterrestrials through meditation or whatever. And he said, you could also contact Sasquatch that way. And Ray said, well, I'm going to try that. So she went out. She didn't do it at night. She did it in daytime. She went out. It was on some sort of a Native American. She told me what it was. I can't remember. It was a Native American land of some sort, a park or something. And she sat down by a stream because her thought was that the stream would be like a conductor to, you know, far off areas or whatever. She said she found the oldest tree she could sit by, lean against this old tree, and started to meditate, put the question out there that she wanted to make contact with Sasquatch. And she apparently she did. So she said she eventually she felt the air get cold. Everything went silent, and it almost sounded like something reminiscent of like a UFO encounter. You know, how everything, all the birds stopped chirping, the wind stopped, everything went quiet, that type of thing. She called it an energy bubble, like a bubble that she said there's some sort of protective bubble over the area. This is something that I guess they can do. And to me, that made me wonder if there was some sort of extraterrestrial involvement in transporting this being here. But anyway, she made contact, and they said to her telepathically, basically, we are here. Now, she said that the energy that she picked up from these beings was so strong and so intense that it actually made her like physically ill. She couldn't handle the energy. She kind of had to back away from it. And eventually she was able to achieve some kind of balance where she still thought maybe some of them left. But they kind of toned down their frequency or whatever enough that she could tolerate it. And she actually had, I don't think she didn't like physically see this being, but she had a conversation with this being that identified as a Sasquatch being. So she said there was one, she felt that there was one that stayed, and she asked it, basically, is there anything that you can tell me about yourself, or anything that you can tell us about yourself, like a message, you know, to humanity, so to speak. And one of the a couple of things stood out, that this being told her. One was that he said many retrieval attempts had been made on his species, on their is race. And Ray took that to mean like many attempts to kind of capture one or find one or kill one or whatever. And I said, no, that's, I don't think that's what that means. Retrieval means, I mean, that's a very specific word.
Bring him back retrieval to where he came means, from.
Yeah, something was left and you're going back to get it. I mean, that's the definition of retrieval. You're going back to get something that you left. And then the other piece that kind of stuck out was, he said that their race is a forbidden topic. And she took it to mean, and I took it to mean also, like, not among humans, but like kind of universally or among non-human intelligence or off planet, so to speak. So if you put those two things together, retrieval attempts, forbidden topic, and you consider that even going back to the Linda Porter case, she said when she was interviewed by Linda Moulton Howe, she told her that she had the impression that whatever they were doing, meddling with the soul and stuff, they weren't really supposed to be doing it. They were doing it on the down low. So if you consider like these non-interference prime directive kind of stuff, there's a code of conduct of some sort. And genetic tinkering might be a violation of that. So if somebody created these creatures in the process possibly of creating us, which is also what this being told Ray, was that they were part of that genetic experimentation that created Homo sapiens, that would explain it being a forbidden topic. Because if you do something, if you break the rules, you don't want people to find out, right? And then that might be the reason why they were left here. So they might have said, yeah, we'll be back later to get you guys. But it didn't work out. And then one of the odd things was I interviewed Tim Moon. He's the guy who wrote Tomato Fields novel, the Bigfoot novel.
He's been on show and Bizarre Encounters before. So I've talked to Tim.
Yeah, Tim. So, then you know that in the process of writing his novel, he's learned a lot more about Bigfoot, and it's kind of expanded his horizons on the whole topic. And the last time that I interviewed him last year, we talked about this because he was starting to meet with different Bigfoot people and whatnot. And I said, well, in all these people that you've met, that you've hung out with, do you know of any who have gone out with the intention of just trying to make contact with peaceful contact with the creature? He said, not one. And here, Ray went out and did exactly what we were talking about. Went out with the intention of making peaceful contact with the Sasquatch. I just thought that was pretty amazing. That's amazing synchronicity or coincidence there. But yeah, so to me, like, I think another aspect of that of this was he told her that they were involved in this process that led to humans, and he said many humans, like he was a little annoyed with that. And I almost took it to mean that we kind of came about through the same kind of process of this tinkering around, this genetic tinkering, but we kind of fared a lot better than his race did. Whereas, you know, we're the prize, where he's like the redhead stepchild. And she said he was very emotional. And now maybe he was just an emotional Sasquatch. I don't know. But I could see that it being emotional, like if he felt abandoned, it was a forbidden topic. And, you know, all these humans are running around enjoying all the benefits of that everything. Yeah, I would piss me off, right?
Dude, that sounds like the whole fallen angels and Nephilim concept almost, you know? Yeah. And I mean, getting into that too, I mean, everybody's definitely thrown that theory on it, but something I was thinking about in the middle of what you were talking about with the whole like telepathy ability, you know, talk about misconception of different perspectives of like religion, everything actually being something that's completely within our reality and everything, you know, you get into the whole genetic tinkering concept, and you can definitely get into the whole idea about them being the Nephilim. And then you can also get into it being that we're like, you know, we're the prize because we were like God's chosen ones. And then they got pissed off, and that's why they became the fallen angels and everything. And you get into the whole like telepathy ability. And I just, something I popped in my mind while you were talking about this, the whole Tower of Babel concept, that we were trying to build something to the sky in order to get into the heavens. You know, if you're looking at that from a more extraterrestrial perspective, you know, again, we could have theoretically been building some form of like a ship or something that we thought would actually get us to that point. And in turn, they're like, oh, crap, all these humans can communicate. Let's make it so they can't. You know, maybe everybody had the ability to communicate telepathically. And the whole idea about making the different languages wasn't like, oh, everybody spoke a language, now everybody forgot and everybody speaks different languages, but rather everybody was was communicating telepathically. And what God did, what the extraterrestrials did, was make it so that we weren't able to communicate through that. So now we had to learn how to communicate through our mouths. And that's where we're at now, where everything, we had the ability, everything had the ability to communicate telepathically, because we are something in a spiritual realm. So that's how something that's spiritual would communicate anyways. But we got thrown off of that because we're getting too far in, you know, and now we had to learn how to talk through our mouths rather than being able to talk through our minds like everything else is able to do. And it was just a misunderstanding of a one single perspective of an event that was a matter of that. That's what it could have been. We were all telepathic, and then they kicked that shit off, and everybody had just had to learn a language now. Or teach, right. Learn, or yeah. Develop language now. Not learn a language, like they wouldn't have existed at that point, but like develop the language.
Right, right. Oh, totally makes sense.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Did Tim tell you the Davy Crockett story when he was on?
I don't think so. Yeah, I had him on like right after he dropped his book. I think I was like one of the first people when he started doing his rounds. So I don't know. I probably didn't talk to him when he was too far into the research yet.
Yeah.
Like he had just finished writing his book, and he was trying to come on shows and try to promote his book a bit.
Davy Crockett ran into what was possibly a Sasquatch when he was out in Texas, either on his way to the Alamo or maybe he'd already made it there. I'm not sure, but he ran into a large hairy man in, I guess, what they call the Big Thicket. I guess that's like Sam Houston National Park or whatever.
Roosevelt supposedly ran into one too, because he wrote about it in his journals too.
And this large hairy man told him to get the hell out of Texas, abandon this cause, get out of here. And of course he ignored it, and within 6 months he was met his fate at the Alamo. And he wrote his brother-in-law a letter, and you can Google it. You can pull the letter up. And he told him, like, he thought he was sick. He thought he had food poisoning. He was hallucinating or something. And he said called it a monster, told him to abandon his cause, leave Texas. And when he asked it why, he said he vanished like I think he said mist on a frog pond. So there's the telepathy. I mean, obviously, he would have communicated that telepathically, right?
I mean, if you're communicating telepathically and you can put thoughts into people's heads, why couldn't you theoretically put a visual, which could be why people just see like one single footprint or no footprints at all and see a Sasquatch, is because maybe they're never actually there in the first place. They're just projecting that they're there, but they're actually over the ridge, you know?
Right, yeah. So, yeah, Davy Crockett, he should have listened. Sasquatch tells you something, you got to listen. You got to pay attention.
But hey, if he didn't go, Texas might be part of Mexico.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Or on the other side, maybe Texas would be his own country, because that was the intention when Texas first started off, was that they were going to be their own country. But then they started having too many attacks from the south. So then they ended up, you know, becoming part of the United States so that they would have that reinforcement from the United States.
Well, I ran across this guy right after I started podcast last year, out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was nearby, but my daughter had bought a piece of furniture at a yard sale, and I had to help her go get it. I had to hook up my trailer and go get it. And this people had a yard sale, moving sale, out in like the middle of nowhere, no cell signal, anything. And there's this guy, he's shopping around at this yard sale, the state sale. And he's looking at something that kind of, I guess he thought it looked like a Bigfoot. And I heard him say to the lady, "Oh yeah, I saw one." I was like, "Oh, wait a minute." What did you see? He said, "I saw Bigfoot." He said, I don't care what anybody thinks. I know what I saw." I said, "Where did you see that?" And he saw it at a national wildlife refuge, just like 20 miles from me. And I said, "Dude, I just started this podcast. I said, you got to come on and tell me about this. You got to be a guest on here." And his teenage daughter was with him. She's like, "Oh, Dad, you got to do it. You got to do it." And he's like, "Oh, I don't know." So we exchanged a few emails, but it never did pan out. And to me, that was like a synchronicity. I was like, "Well, God damn it." I was like, what was the point in even crossing our paths if it wasn't going to work out, right? And now I'm wondering, well, maybe the point was to let me know there might be a Sasquatch like 20 miles from me. Maybe I should go try Ray's technique out there. And not only that, but 30 miles in the opposite direction, supposedly at another national park, there's supposedly Sasquatch sightings there. And they've got even a plaster cast. And there's a store selling merch, of course. But
who knows? Profit.
Maybe there's some Sasquatch around here. So I don't know. Maybe I'll go try that method out. See what happens.
Man, you'll have to definitely keep me posted on that. And when we come back for the next round, hopefully you'll have been out there and we can dive a little bit more into it, man.
Yeah. Well, what I like about when Ray did it, she went out in broad daylight. I was like, that makes sense. She's a lady going out by herself. She can go in the woods by herself at night. And what's the point going out at night other than to make it more dramatic or something? It's just, you can do it just as easily in the daytime. So I don't know. I might try it. I'm going to try it. I'll let you know.
And I guess with that, man, like I said, we'll definitely have to come back around once you try that stuff. And if I was lot closer, I'd definitely come out there and try it with you. But at least as far as this stuff goes, man, I like trying to wrap everything up with some words of wisdom. So if there's any words of wisdom you might be able to bestow on the listeners this time, man, what might it be?
Words of wisdom. Oh, good Lord. Where to start? Well, I would say, kind of like what we were talking about before we started, is when I approach this stuff, I do it with a completely open mind, and I'm not approaching Sasquatch with the idea that it's a wild animal missing link type of thing that's just elusive, that's running around in the wild. While that might be my understanding based on everything that I've heard, and read and seen my whole life, that might not be all there is to the story. That might not be the whole truth of the whole thing. So whenever you approach any topic like that, any subject like that, my words of wisdom would be, don't hold any preconceived idea. So when you approach it, you're open to whatever possibilities, come your way, and whatever it may be, because people have unconscious little pet beliefs and theories. And a lot of times you go into something, a subject with this already previously held belief, let that stuff go and see where it takes you. So for example, if you don't think there's if you're a Bigfoot person and you don't think there's an ET connection, let that go and see where the possibilities take you, because it's possible there might be a connection. If you're a UFO person, you don't think there's a Bigfoot connection, let that stuff go. You got to let all that preconceived notions go. And sometimes people get attached to an idea because they've held it so long, and they don't want to admit that, they don't even want to admit to themselves that they could have been wrong in this thought that they've had. And I've been there, done that. you know, whatever it is, just open yourself up, let it go, be open to possibilities.
I definitely agree with that. And I'm sure you've had the same thing happen to you. The more you dive into cryptids, aliens, the paranormal, all of it, there's this big connecting factor. And I don't think anybody's figured it out yet, but there is a huge link between all of them. But if you have two preconceived notions of each of those things individually, then you won't see the connecting piece between all of them. But if you stand back and you just take it all in with an open mind, then you start noticing these little common ties, such as orbs that you see with all three of them. And I'm sure that there's a lot more of it. It's just a matter of stepping back, having an open mind, and realizing that all of this stuff is actually connected. And it's more than likely all somewhat of the same phenomenon, just different aspects of somewhat of the same phenomenon.
Yeah, totally.
For anybody that may have enjoyed this conversation, they want to come and check out your podcast, they want to check out that awesome interview that you did recently, where can everybody come and find your show on the internet, and where can everybody get in contact with you if they potentially want to be a guest on the show or share their experiences?
Yeah, so the podcast is called Aliens for Beginners. It's on Spotify, Apple, basically wherever you go to listen to podcasts. I have a YouTube channel that's pretty much brand new. I've got two full-length interviews on there and some shorts, some clips. So I'm working on building that up. So that's Aliens for Beginners YouTube channel. There's a couple really, I really got lucky with my first guest that I interviewed on video format and put on there. Dude's name is Daniel. Check that out. And then Ray Dove, we talked about her Sasquatch encounter. She's on there in another interview. And I'm on Instagram at Aliens for Beginners Pod. I'm on TikTok at Aliens for Beginner. And I'm on X at AFB Podcast. X sucks. I hate X. I
never even made an account on there because I didn't even want to fuck with it, if I'm being honest with you.
I can't get any traction on X. But X doesn't suck. It's fine. I haven't mastered it. And I think you're better off if you get a premium account. I don't know if I want
to. I don't think it's ever going to be what it used to be, though. Because even within mainstream news, politics, like all that kind of stuff, it's just...
Yeah.
Like a year ago. Oh, look what this person posted. Look what this person posted. Look what this person posted. And now you just hear about X from the Elon Musk standpoint, but I don't think that it has nearly as much footing as it used to. And I think it's it may be on a slow decline, but I'm pretty sure it's on like a decline to eventually just becoming irrelevant.
Well, I follow a lot of the UFO accounts on there, and they're so wrapped up in nuts and bolts UFO stuff, disclosure, and they're just chasing their tail. I'd like to see them kind of branch out a little bit more, but so you can email me at aliensforbeginnerspod@gmail.com. If you want to be a guest, hit me up. You can DM me on Instagram at aliensforbeginnerspod, and I'm totally accessible. I had a lady, she messaged me on Facebook of all things, and I do very little on Facebook, and it's just by shit luck that I saw her message. She wrote me a great big long message. She said I discovered your podcast a couple of weeks ago. I've listened to every episode. I'd really like to talk to you. Me and my son had this experience, and I've got all this stuff going on, and blah blah blah. So I said, okay. So I'll talk to you. So I had a call with her last Saturday, and this lady talked for two hours about her experiences, and so she's going to be an upcoming guest. Hit me up, email me. I'm accessible. I'm open. I would love to hear your story, even if you just want to talk. I'm here. I'm accessible. If you interact with me on social media, I try to interact. I'm not one of these. I'm small potatoes, but I mean, even if I had, a couple hundred thousand followers, I think I would still make an effort to, at least interact with, a dozen or so a week.
I mean, people forget you only become popular because of the people that are interested in listening and talking to you. So if you lose track of the people and don't talk to the people who are interested in you, then you're losing track of why you even got there in the first place.
Exactly. Yet somehow they retain their followers I don't know, but whatever. I'm not here to judge, but yeah, hit me up if you're interested.
And of course, I will include all of those links down in the show description so everybody can find it quick and easy. Yeah. And man, I appreciate you coming on today. I appreciate you sharing everything that you've been diving into lately. And I'm really looking forward to the next time you come on. And we're definitely going to have to make it sooner rather than later, man, because it's always fun when you come on the show.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And hey, we'll talk to you next time.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is the one that I'm the most active on, of course. Or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are on the link tree. One of which is to contact me, and the other one is to report an encounter. So also, don't forget to report those encounters through that or through OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. And every single thing that I mentioned throughout the episode is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.